everybody.
Hi, friends.
And welcome to
The Bitchery of History.
My name is Max.
And I'm Allison.
And this week, I'm talking about Annie Patchen.
Ooh, yes. I'm going to be talking about Queen Victoria.
Oh, la la. This week, it is the colonizers and the colonized.
Ooh.
It's also, though, let's take a quick second to talk about how this is our first episode back in studio.
Since our live show and start of the fourth season. Yes. Our live show was awesome.
So much fun.
Also, those pirate ladies, get at me.
That was wild. You know, hearing the reaction, there's nothing like hearing the reaction of people to that history.
Yeah.
Like in person. It's invigorating.
The best.
Exactly. Exactly. So I guess I'll start us off.
Take it away.
All right. So I'm talking about Annie Patchen, who was a Tibetan Buddhist warrior nun.
I'm so on board. So, I almost swore about how on board I was, and then I remembered I wanted kids to listen to this,
right.
So I didn't.
Yes, we are.
But I am on board AF.
Yes. Yes. Avoiding that explicit.
There we go.
Explicit rating on the iTunes. So born Patchen Dolma, she's actually the only surviving daughter of Pomda Gonor, who is the chieftain of the Lemda clan in Gonju. Okay. Very fancy way of saying he's a chieftain.
Great.
In Tibet.
Perfect. Now and I understand.
Exactly. So she is raised as essentially a princess, as the daughter of a chieftain. So she has a pretty idyllic childhood.
Amazing.
And she's actually initiated into the Buddhist tradition when she's 8 years old. Her first act of defiance, though,
comes at the age of
17.
All right.
So until then, she's, you know, going to school, learning, basically living this nice, quiet life.
Yeah.
Until she learns that her father has been arranging to marry her into the family of another chieftain.
Oh, no.
So, because of course, if she's going to lead, she needs a husband of some sort to help her lead.
Mm-hmm.
Were you about to?
Well, it's so fun already. I'm seeing like similarities between our two stories, even though they take place on like totally different continents and parts of the world. And so it's just
totally different layers, levels of society, totally different kinds of society.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
So she sees in her life, her aunt had gone through a very painful marriage and had actually escaped into a Tibetan monastery, a Buddhist monastery as well. So seeing how much marriage had weighed on the women in her family, she decides, well, that's just not for me.
Yeah.
And she runs away on horseback.
Oh.
And makes,
problem solved.
She makes for the nearest Tibetan monastery, or
perfect.
I keep saying Tibetan, Buddhist monastery.
Great.
And she's actually pursued by some of the family servants, like her dad sends the family servants after her.
But when
the servants reach her, they carry a message from her father saying, come back and I will annul the engagement. You don't have to get married to this dude.
Okay.
Which is how they get her to come back. That being said, she does make it eventually to the monastery.
Okay.
And she starts learning all the ways of being a Buddhist and how to be a Buddhist nun. By the next year, 1951, tensions had actually
1951?
Yeah, 1951.
Whoa.
She just passed away not too long ago.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. She was born in 1933.
Okay.
By the next year, tensions had begun rising between Tibet and China.
Right.
So, of course, I'm sure at some point you've heard either in popular culture, at some different point you've heard Free Tibet. People make it like this big pop cultural thing now. And this is when it all started really getting underway, because China had claimed to Tibet, or they said that they had claimed to Tibet, and so they started.
Right.
Stories began arriving in Gonju of Chinese soldiers abducting children for re-education in government schools, of dissidents being shipped off to labor camps.
Oh, no.
And actually one source that I read said that they were forcing pacifists to kill animals, to exterminate like rodents and pests and stuff like that.
I don't want that. I'll subscribe.
Yeah. Hard pass.
That's a zero.
Yeah, exactly. But all of this leads her father to actually teach her how to shoot.
Nice.
And how to actually organize the fighting forces that they were leading as the heads of this clan. And so for the next few years, she even sits by his side in administrative meetings with the other local chieftains. Now, during all of this, Annie had been splitting her time between home and a local monastery. And actually, by 1954, at the age of 21, she becomes Annie Patchen, which actually means Nun Big Courage.
Yes.
Nun Big Courage.
Yes.
Exactly. But her father needs her back home. So eventually she does actually come home permanently to stay. Over the next few years, tensions just become all-out fighting between the Chinese and the Tibetan people. And by the end of 1956, tens of thousands of her countrymen were now in the hills fighting in armed rebellion against the Chinese. And then 1958, her father dies. Like right in the middle of all this fighting, right when he's needed most. And the transition of power from her dad to her, of course, is not smooth because she's a woman trying to step into a man's role. And actually, one of her fathers in particular keeps making excuses as to why he couldn't come to meetings or why he couldn't do certain things. And by the time he actually does show up, she is so angry that she calls for her whip in order to punish him.
Whoa.
And she whips him once, but she's a Buddhist. She is not sworn, but she feels the pain of all other living things, right? So the story goes that she hits him once because the pain of inflicting pain on him was too much for her.
Wow.
And like, just take a second. Think about that.
Yeah.
As I tell you the rest of her story, and like, this woman did what she had to because she had to, not because she wanted to.
Gotcha.
Not because of anything else.
Getting it done.
So the next year, this is 1959.
Okay.
She leads a force of resistance fighters, 600 strong. She's riding a horse at the front of 600 armed men.
What?
To join the others in the hills.
Oh, man.
Once she gets there, she learns of an impending Chinese attack and actually returns home to gather her family and to warn the rest of the clan. And so everyone picks up and they join with all of these other Tibetans from the area and all go into the hill together. Now, Annie Patchen actually takes an active role in not only hiding those who needed to be hid, so she took this large mass of people and broke them into smaller groups and hid them in the hills so they'd be better protected from the Chinese forces. She also helped to devise and dispatch defensive patrols that were actively fighting and rebuffing the Chinese.
Wow.
Unfortunately, though, they were overwhelmed. I mean, the Chinese just had such overwhelming numbers. And by the end of 1959, Annie Patchen, along with her mother, aunt, and grandmother, actually fled towards India in order to try and make it out of the country to safety. And they traveled on foot for about 25 days with 300 other refugees.
And they just walked to India?
They walked towards India from Tibet.
Have you seen that movie, The Way Back?
No.
Not The Way, Way Back.
No, I've seen that.
They both came out around the same time, which is very confusing. But it's about people in World War II who walked all the way from Siberia to India.
Whoa.
It's crazy intense.
Who's in it?
Ed Harris is in it.
Oh,
Saoirse
like
Ronan is in it.
Oh, I love her.
Colin Farrell is in it.
Oh, my word. You said, and I went, Firth or Farrell, I'm down either way.
I was trying to remember which Colin F. it was. It's Colin Farrell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a good time.
It really was good. Very intense and long.
Huh.
But anyway, walking to India is no joke.
It's no joke.
And they're coming from the other direction.
Right, exactly.
So, you know.
Now,
stuff.
So they get there. They don't even get to India, though.
Okay,
they don't get to India because they are captured by Chinese forces.
Oy.
Annie Patchen would spend the next 21 years of her life in prison.
No.
Yes. As soon as she's arrested, she's hung by her wrists and beaten while being interrogated. She's a chieftain. So they're trying to get information out of her. So she's hung by her wrists and beaten while being interrogated.
Mm.
And then when that didn't work, she was hung by her legs and beaten while interrogated. And when she would pass out, they would splash her with water so she would wake up, and then they would start the whole process all over again. After a month, they actually released most of the women and children, but they did not release Annie Panchen. They transferred her to a prison. And because she wouldn't talk, they put her in leg irons that they left her in for a year, a full year. During this time, she lives in crowded cells, which were apparently rampant with lice. So she's covered in lice this whole time. She literally watched hundreds of her fellow inmates die of famine around her.
Oh my gosh.
She once said that she was so hungry during this time that she would rejoice when she found a worm in the soil.
Yeah, the similarities have totally ended.
Yeah. Slightly. At one prison, so she's moved from prison to prison. And really, what's ironic about this whole thing in a very sad way is that the prisons, quote unquote, that they were using were Buddhist monasteries that they had transformed.
This just gets worse and worse, Max.
I know. I know. At one prison, she was kept in solitary confinement for 9 months after refusing to denounce her religion and rebuking an officer as well. She says in her memoir that she made it through on her beliefs.
Yeah.
Setting a goal of ritually prostrating herself 100,000 times in those 9 months. Dreaming one day of seeing her family. Hating Mao Zedong. She would Mao Zedong.
Is this the woman that you texted me that you said I'm literally crying over this right now?
I was crying while doing this research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to take a moment to think about going, okay, well, I'm in solitary confinement. I don't know how long. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kneel and pray 100,000 times, and I'm going to keep track, and that's how I'm going to keep from going insane.
And I'm going to picture my family.
That's incredible.
I'm going to picture the Dalai Lama.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm going to picture how much I hate Mao Zedong.
Oh, wow. It's incredible.
I did the math. 9 months, if we're assuming it's about 30, 31 days.
Yeah.
We're talking about prostrating yourself 370 times a day, about 15 times an hour, if you're doing it 24 hours a day.
And hopefully you're sleeping.
Right. Hopefully you're sleeping. So really 30 times an hour, once every 2 minutes or so. A few years later after this, and actually near the end of her prison time, she's able to befriend a guard. Who actually finds a way to get word to her family and gets them to the camp so that they can have a reunion. Unfortunately, her grandmother and aunt had already passed away, and her mom is the only one who's able to make it. Unfortunately, it's the last time that they see each other. And her mom dies in 1976 after Annie Patchen had been imprisoned for 17 years. And one source that I found said that her mom left four things for Annie Patchen.
Yeah.
She left 3 bags of rice and a red shirt because she wanted to make sure that she was fed and clothed when she got out of prison.
I can't with this anymore. I know. It's too much. It's debilitating.
I know. She's finally released from prison in 1981 after 21 years and the death of Mao Zedong. From here, she goes on pilgrimage. She visits different monasteries around Tibet, eventually making her way back to Lhasa, which is where she'd made her stand with those 600 fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And she continued the cause of Tibetan independence. She went right back to doing what she was doing before. And what's really sad is that, of course, every Tibetan monastery that she visited along the way was just completely wrecked. So between 1987 and 1988, she helps organize and then actually participates in 3 different demonstrations against the Chinese occupation. Mm. And after the third one, in 1989, she hears that she's about to be rearrested and flees to Nepal. And she actually makes it this time, and then she's airlifted to India. And it's here where she finally achieves her goal of meeting the Dalai Lama.
Oh my gosh! I can't!
The Dalai Lama grants her a personal audience soon after she lands in India. And she actually settles in the Gaden Choling Nunnery, pardon my pronunciation, which is actually very close to where the Dalai Lama lives to this day, actually. And this is a quote from her autobiography. She said, "His Holiness said that we must not hate the Chinese, that it was the policies of a few, not the people, that had caused Tibet harm. He said we must forgive our enemies. I found it was not so easy to do. Forgiveness comes from the inside, the heart. And though my body has been released from prison, my heart wasn't free. Even after my time in the caves, I still struggled with anger."
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
Annie Patchen would spend the last 13 years of her life traveling the world in support of her cause, frequently actually as part of the Dalai Lama's personal entourage. Mm. She even led marches in the United Kingdoms and in the United States. Her story was told in her autobiography, which is called Sorrow Mountain, the remarkable story of a Tibetan warrior nun.
Oh my gosh.
Which was actually written by Adelaide Donnelly, but it was dictated by Annie Patchen.
Gotcha.
And actually, Richard Gere, who is a Buddhist, helped get the book published.
Whoa.
And wrote the preface to the book.
What a turn of events. Right? That escalated quickly. Okay.
Annie Patchen died February 2nd, 2002, of heart failure at the age of 68, or possibly 69. She wasn't quite sure when she was.
You can't blame her.
Yeah. In the book, she told us how she would like to be remembered.
I don't think I'm ready, but tell me.
As for me, the story will go like this. She led her people to fight against the Chinese. She was present at the protests in Lhasa. She worked to save the ancient spiritual teachings. When I die, just my story will be left.
Oof.
Oh, I got goosebumps.
Oh, man.
So that's Annie Patchen.
Wow.
I mean, what do you say? I know, just a heavy sigh.
A heavy sigh. And then you say, you know, we haven't had a really like sad, heavy story in a while.
Yeah.
But it is important to remember, as with all human beings, there are women who struggle and don't always achieve their goals and have to fight all the time.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh yeah, I had to really fight to get into medical school and then I became...
I changed the world. I did a crazy thing.
You know, everybody's going through something.
Exactly. I mean, this is that prototypical Sisyphus story. Like she is rolling that stone up that hill. And this is one of those stories where it's like the end is not the...
The end.
The end is not the story.
Yeah.
The story is the story. The fact that she spent 21 years in horrific prison conditions and then got out and said, I still believe in my cause. Yeah. And at this point, I have nothing else to live for.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and change the world. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I kept thinking you were going to say that she won a Nobel Peace Prize, but never did.
Not so much.
That's a bummer.
I know.
Well, my woman never won a Nobel Peace Prize either
because
Nobel Prizes weren't around.
Also, being Queen of England is...
It's fair. It's fine. It's fine. But yes, Queen Victoria is who I shall be discussing. Now, the thing with Queen Victoria... The thing. There's so many things. Her life is so fascinating, and she reigned for so long that there's still movies that come out about various periods of her life that fill 2 hours of screen time with like just a little slice of this or that. I first became interested in Queen Victoria when I saw The Young Victoria with Emily Blunt.
Oh my God.
It is a lovely movie, I must say.
Talk about weeping during a movie.
It's a lot. And it's happy.
Yeah.
There are other parts of Queen Victoria's life.
It's redemptive.
Towards the end of her life when she's become a widow, that are more heavy stories. Mm-hmm. So point being, there's so much to overview in her life. But, you know, we'll do what we can. And I'm not going to focus on just one time period.
Right.
Because... You can go watch a movie about young Victoria and old Victoria and Victoria and Abdul.
Oh my God, I was going to mention it if you didn't.
Yeah, I'm going to mention it. So there's so many different periods in her life. But the other thing that's wonderful about Queen Victoria is, like we've talked about with so many other female rulers, when women are in charge, things are great.
Huh.
And things were pretty great in England anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the colonies maybe were... Not so great for the colonized, but things in England were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
You know, I'm excited. Queen Victoria, of course, is one of those figures that just, if you study anything about women's history, Queen Victoria is everywhere.
Totally brought up. Yeah.
Excited because I've seen a lot of these movies, but I don't really know a lot of her life and the history of her life.
Well, okay. So here's where we'll start.
Okay.
So she says about the beginning of her becoming Queen Victoria. I went into my sitting room, only in my dressing gown, alone, and saw them, They acquainted me that my poor uncle the king was no more and had expired at 12 minutes past 2 this morning, and consequently that I was queen. So, when Queen Victoria was born, she was not yet a queen, and it didn't really seem likely that she was going to become queen when she was born. She was a little kind of far down the line of succession, but her mother was very protective of her and didn't really have a thing of like, I believe you will be queen, and I'm like foreshadowing this thing, but just was like, you are in the line of succession, and so nothing bad can happen to you. She was very overprotected as a child. She couldn't walk downstairs without holding on to someone else's hand.
Really?
Typically her mother's hand, because what if she fell down the stairs?
Right.
Tragedy.
Oy. Exactly.
Everything would go horribly wrong. So when she finally became queen, she sort of is free as well for the first time. She became queen June 20th, 1837. Got woken up and was like, today's your day.
Hey, by the way,
you just got drafted to the majors.
Right, exactly.
I hope you're ready. She was born in 1819, and she was the only child of King George III's fourth son. So she was fifth in line to the throne when she was born.
Okay.
But there was a lot of death in her family as she grew up, the death of her father, her brothers, and any other sort of legitimate heirs. So she was the closest surviving heir when it all went down. So
you don't got to be first, you just got to be last.
That's right. And apparently hold people's hands while you're walking downstairs. So she becomes queen, but because she was so protected as a child, she didn't know a ton about running a country and a bunch of colonies and all of these things. And she kind of not really turns her back on her mother, but really is like, I'm 18, so legally I'm queen. And I'm going to figure this out. Right. And, you know,
it's like that scene in The Crown where Elizabeth goes to her mother and is like, what were you teaching me this whole time?
Yeah. Leave me alone. I totally, totally got this. Mm-hmm. She leans very heavily on her advisors, particularly Lord Melbourne. And he was very fond of her as well, kind of viewing her more as a daughter than like, hey, hey. He is the one who is kind of like, hey, let's get you a husband. Mm-hmm. How about we do that? So they end up arranging a marriage to her first cousin,
sure,
Albert. And they, of course, have a lovely, amazing 21-year marriage. And Albert also is responsible for a lot of the good things that came out of her rulership.
Reign,
thank you. Mm-hmm. It's production brain. Out of her reign, he, you know, was very interested in arts and science, and so the big exhibition, which has the Crystal Palace and all that, was kind of his idea, and they just worked so well together and had many, many children together.
For real, though.
In fact, 9 children, and because, of course, it's the 1800s, so they're intermarrying their kids, all these international alliances. So she has 42 grandchildren, or did, and they could be found in the royal families of Germany, Russia, Greece, Romania, Sweden, Norway, and Spain.
So what you're saying is World War II was a fight between Queen Victoria's children.
Basically. You know how everyone's everyone is, you know, 1% Mongolian because Genghis Khan got with so many women. It's like, but really, everyone's like 1% Victoria.
Right. The royal families of Europe are
everyone
about
is
25%
somehow related.
Victoria.
Interestingly enough, Kaiser Wilhelm remarked that had his grandmother still been alive, the First World War may have never happened because she simply would not have allowed her relatives to go to war with one another.
That's like my grandmother. She's like, this family, I will hold it together.
Now, her reign wasn't all like beauty and rainbows and kids and love and expanding arts and sciences and amazing things.
Right.
She had many attempts made on her life because politics and, you know, all people being
it's a turbulent time in the 1800s.
Yeah. So she also had a stalker, a notorious teenager known as in the newspapers as the Boy Jones.
A notorious teenager.
Mm-hmm. So between 1838 and 1841, Edward Jones managed to break into Buckingham Palace several times, hiding under the queen's sofa, sitting on her throne, and reportedly even stealing her underwear before being caught.
Okay, first of all.
Yep.
Rude.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
Have some respect. Right. I get hiding under the sofa. I get sitting on the throne. Leave the woman's underwear alone.
Yeah, no good. Then on May 29th, 1842, Victoria was riding in a carriage in London when John Francis aimed a pistol at her, but the gun did not fire. Luckily, because she's just in a carriage.
Right.
And he escaped. Now, the following day, Victoria drove the same route.
Dumb.
Though faster. Dummy. And with a greater escort in a deliberate attempt to provoke Francis to take a second aim and catch him in the act.
Okay. Not dumb. Yeah. Calculated.
Now, as expected, it's medium dumb. Francis shot at her, but he was seized by plainclothes policemen and convicted of high treason.
Well, yeah.
So see, this is like the one period I feel that hasn't been fully covered in the Queen Victoria movies is like Queen Victoria escapes all the assassins that try to kill her all the time and also people sleeping under her sofa stealing her underwear. It's casual. It's 1850s. There's no burglar
alarms.
Once
again, Emily Blunt is Queen Victoria in medium dumb.
I mean, but also, can you imagine all the advisors being like, no, he shot at you. You shouldn't do the same thing. And her being like, no, I'm going to do the same thing so we can catch him.
Let him try again.
It's like that thing, that quiz where you find out if you're a sociopath or not. I'm not saying Queen Victoria was a sociopath, but however.
Maybe 4%.
On July 3rd, 2 days after Francis's death sentence, was commuted to transportation for life, meaning bye-bye, hello, Australia.
Transportation for life.
John William Bean also tried to fire a pistol at the Queen, but it was loaded only with paper and tobacco and had too little charge. What are you going to do with a paper and tobacco gun? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, this is the next Queen Victoria movie.
So you're
right
saying
here.
That Queen Victoria had the benefit of dumb, assassins
of medium
who
dumb.
Really were not that great.
They're medium dumb. I'm calling it medium dumb. Now, Bean was sentenced to 18 months in jail. Now, in a similar attack in 1849, which is a little bit before this, Irishman William Hamilton fired a powder-filled pistol at Victoria's carriage. And in 1850, the Queen did sustain an injury when she was assaulted by an insane ex-army officer, Robert Pate. As Victoria was riding in a carriage, Pate struck her with his cane, crushing her bonnet,
oh my,
and bruising her forehead. The horror.
Her bonnet. I don't know if you have this in your research, but I really hope she was taking different paths and not just like, we're going to take the attack path today.
No, I think at least for the Francis one, it's like literally we're having a meeting and we're all sipping tea and everyone's being like, but don't. And she's being like, but yes.
But hold my coffee.
But hello. We're going to do the same because I'm the queen and I'm smart.
Mm-hmm.
Medium dumb. So in foreign policy, the queen's influence during the middle years of her reigns was generally used to support peace and reconciliation. She pressed her ministers not to intervene in the Prussia-Denmark War, and her letter to the German emperor, whose son had married her daughter, helped to avert a second Franco-German War. So again, if she had been alive during World War I, it would right. literally not have happened.
Right.
She would have just called, can you imagine just calling everyone together?
Family meeting.
To the family meeting at Buckingham Palace in 2 weeks. Now you need to stop. I don't care who started it. Apologize.
Okay, first of all, you don't speak. No, you don't speak.
You don't you have the scepter.
You listen.
The speaking scepter.
You don't have the scepter. You listen.
Yep.
And you learn.
Now, she was very conservative in some respects. Like many of the time, she opposed giving women the vote, which is okay. It happened later. On social issues, she did tender favor measures to improve the lot of the poor, such as the Royal Commission on Housing. She also supported many charities involved in education, hospitals, other areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, she reigned for a really super long time. So again, I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to end on the first movie that I saw Queen Victoria in, which is A Little Princess uh-huh. with Shirley Temple,
Aww.
Which if you haven't seen it, do. There's many versions. The Shirley Temple one is excellent. But that one takes place during the Indian War. I don't know what you call it. My history is bad. But basically, her father is off fighting in the war in India.
Oh, yes.
And comes
when
back.
When they were making it a colony.
Yes, and comes back, and he's like blinded or and shell shocked or something, and doesn't understand that it's his daughter like trying to talk to him. Like she's searching the hospital trying to find her dad, and then she finds him randomly in a room, and he's in a wheelchair, and then she's like shaking him and being like, "It's me, it's me." And he doesn't recognize her. And then he finally does. Thank goodness. You can wipe all your tears away. But then like this old lady in a wheelchair gets rolled in and they have this little conversation. And as a kid, you don't understand it totally. But then as I grew up, I was like, wait a minute. That nice old lady who's so nice to Sarah Crewe at the end of the movie, that's Queen Victoria. So she has a major influence in so many things, not just in like literally supporting the arts financially and with different programs, but just culturally.
Yeah.
She's a major, major figure.
Yeah.
And that's Queen Victoria, medium dumb, in a small nutshell. Yeah. There's so much more to unpack all the time.
Medium dumb.
Medium dumb.
You know, there really is something to be said, and to bring up the crown again, there's this moment when Elizabeth is being crowned, and one of her advisors says something along the lines of, you know, there, some of the best moments of the English monarchy have come under the female rulers.
I mean, here's the thing. I think if you went to an average American kid and was like, can you name some kings and queens of England?
Yeah.
You're probably going to get maybe King Henry.
Sure.
Maybe a King John.
Maybe Richard.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But you're definitely going to get Queen Elizabeth, Queen Victoria, and Queen Elizabeth. Right. I mean, Queen Elizabeth is a twofer, so maybe that's cheating.
Right.
The other thing I just have to throw in about the crown is I saw a great tweet the other day that said, are we going to have to wait till season 29 of The Crown to find out how Queen Elizabeth feels about Meghan Markle?
You know, I think that they're BFFs.
Oh, I don't think there's any drama going on at all. I just thought it was funny. It was very clever. Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for the new season. Have you seen the pictures of the new actors who are replacing everyone?
I haven't seen season two yet.
Oh my gosh, we're going to have to sit down and watch it. It is.
I've just, you know, I get so compared to Claire Foy now that it's hard to watch. Yeah.
You know what I love about Claire Foy?
What?
Is that she, have you seen what she's doing now? She's doing The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest.
She's a total badass
and she's
right now.
Doing this other thing. She's going, I can do prim, proper Queen of England, but I could also do mess with me and I'm going to kick you from here to Sunday.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to be the next Claire Foy. Oh, I'm involved.
You know what, Allison?
What? Let's do it.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe in you.
Thank you. Well, friends, we are trying a new thing in season four in which we're focusing on bringing you the ladies and their stories in all their glory so they have more time to delve into the 21 years that Annie Patchen spent in prison and all of the many attempts on Queen Victoria's life. So we're jumping right to Cause of the Week, and both our episodes in October, the Cause of the Week is going to be to vote.
Vote.
Register to vote. I got a Snapchat from Team Snapchat today, which normally is dumb and I hate it. I'm like, I don't need a happy Valentine's Day from Team Snapchat. However, Team Snapchat Snapchatted me. The midterm elections are coming up on November 6th. American flag emoji. Help decide our country's future. Click below to register to vote. Click emoji. So you can literally do it from your Snapchat app.
I got it from Tinder.
Amazing.
I got it from Lyft.
I didn't get it from Lyft.
Oh, I think they're giving people free rides to the polls this year.
Oh, heck yes.
Absolutely.
My polling place is across the street. I can walk there.
Mine's right over there. I can walk to mine as well.
Oh, it's so nice.
Voting is so easy, so quick.
And if you can't take a lift, you can't get there, you can always register to vote by mail.
Yes.
Not saying you don't have the time on polling day to go is a very lame excuse.
Yes, you have the time. You have the time. So, places you can register to vote. VoteSaveAmerica.com.
Just Google Vote Save America.
Vote Save America. It's done by the Crooked Media team, the people who do Pod Save America. Great website.
Hello.vote.
Yes. Rock the vote.
Secretary of State website for your particular state.
Just Google register to vote, and Google will give you all of the answers that you possibly need. This midterm election, not to get too political, is the most important election of our lives. And what's also very exciting is there are more women running mm-hmm. right now and more diverse people running right now than we've ever seen before. It is the most exciting time to be alive to vote. Another thing I want to say, if once you've registered to vote, and this is primarily for California, there's a great website called votersedge.org. I use this website to research my ballot. You go to the website.
Oh, cool.
You put in your street address as well as your zip code. It'll pull up your specific ballot. It'll bring up all the candidates for every office. It'll bring up all the propositions on the ballot. It'll tell you what they stand for. It'll let you click and choose them.
We should put that up on our Facebook page.
We will absolutely do that. Because at the end, once you've picked everyone, it prints out a ballot for you to take into the booth with you.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yes.
Because sometimes you think that you will remember, but you won't remember. Amazing.
November 6th.
Do it.
Do it.
And that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much to all of our listeners, to everybody that leaves us a review, to everyone that follows our Facebook page. We're so excited to bring you season 4. We could not do this without you.
Oh my God, so excited. If you would like to keep in touch with us between the weeks, now remember, episodes are going to be coming out every other week this season. You can find us on Facebook. Just search The Bitchery of History.
We are on Twitter. You can search The Bitchery of History. Bitchery Podcast will pop up.
We're also on Instagram at The Bitchery of History. We have a new website.
Woohoo!
As well. Well, same website, new URL, thebitcheryofhistory.com. No longer that jumble
craziness.
Of letters.
So much easier to remember. We do have a lot of the same team. So glad to have them back for season 4.
Yes.
So special shout out to Jess,
Sydney,
Kim,
and Jeanette.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
And as always,
bitches get stuff done.